Hello and welcome to another episode of the County Cricket Podcast. I'm your host, Aaron, aka the Cricket Connoisseur, and on my left, as always, is my Lancashirean co-host, Joe Nutsy Nuttall. So Joe, mate, how's your day been so far?
Been an early one because I got up early to watch the Stars. The BBL has started now. Stars are flying, which is good. A few big performances from Maxi, of course, so far. So yeah, it's been good. Unfortunately, the game was abandoned, so it was a lot of sitting around. Thankfully, I was in the warmth of my own house rather than out there, because apparently it was freezing, according to several different people over in Australia. But no, I'm all good, thanks.
That's good to hear, mate. And yeah, as you said, Launceston, wasn't it, today with the BBL?
Yeah, it was. Yeah,
looked like rural Warwickshire in terms of the weather. Bit of rain, very cold.
It did look like England. It did. I bet Joe Clark felt right at home there, to be honest, for the Scorchers. I bet he really did.
Exactly, yeah, just like playing Trent Bridge, maybe like late September. But exactly. Yeah, I'm glad to hear that you're doing well, mate, of course. Good to see that you're keeping positive. And also joining us on the County Cricket Podcast today is none other than North Ants all-rounder, Tom Taylor. So Tom, first of all, thank you very much for joining us on the podcast today, mate. How's your day been so far?
Yeah, it's been really good. Probably similar to Joe's, up early watching the BBL game, and then just off out and did a little bit of shopping and walking the dog, just the general day. Day in the life.
The general 2020 day, innit?
Yeah. The typical day of a cricketer at the moment.
Fair enough. And Tom, I have to ask, I suppose, what supermarket chain?
Sainsbury's is the local one, so it's pretty straight, you know, direct route, straight in, straight out, get the job done. No mooching.
Fair enough.
Yeah, solid choice that. Joe, what about you? I know this isn't really cricket-based, but what's the choice of supermarket?
I mean, I live round quite a few shops, but probably Aldi, my one. Well, right now, actually, we've been doing a lot of Asda, online ones, and then I go to pick it up because it's obviously better. It's hard, but when we do, yeah, we tend to do that. But if we have to go into a shop, probably Aldi. But yeah, Aldi do good chocolate as well. So,
yeah. And for anyone out there interested in county cricket, the Aldi outside Edgbaston Cricket Ground, oh my word. Go there straight before a match, get your stuff. Jobs are good. But yeah, that's
enough about talking. They enjoy finals day, don't they?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that should be quite a busy day for the Aldi across the road. But yeah, that's enough about supermarkets. Let's talk some county cricket then. So Tom, first of all then, let's go right back to the origin of your cricketing journey then. What was your first ever memory of cricket, either playing or watching the game?
I tried to think of a different response to the generic ones that you hear, but I can't really think of any. It's mainly just family. My dad was a cricketer, so it's pretty much watching him growing up and trying to follow him, really, and just trying to. I didn't really play cricket at school. It was kind of just I got to maybe eight, nine, ten, and it was playing in the back garden. Just went down to the local cricket ground. When it rained there, just try and hunt for a different cricket ground, try and see if junior practice and stuff was still going on. But I didn't really properly start taking it seriously until age 10, 11. That was sort of when I went to district trials and all that. But I just played, to be honest, I played quite a lot of sports. I was into my football and badminton, just pretty much anything I could play, really, especially primary school.
Yeah. I suppose it's a pretty typical English way to get into the game, isn't it? Multi-sports as well, of course. Joe, would you agree with that? Was that your kind of pathway into cricket?
Yeah, I just played football and cricket when I was younger. I've played football first and then kind of cricket followed a few years after that. And then, yeah, just never really stopped playing. Obviously, not to a higher level, unfortunately, like Tom is, but, you know, at a club level just for fun. So, yeah, and I enjoy it still. It's good, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Such a good game. That's the thing. As you get older, yeah. I think you appreciate cricket a lot more. Well, at least that's the case from my perspective, I suppose. But Tom, you mentioned there in those early days then, your dad was obviously a huge influence, your brother as well, who also happens to play county cricket now for Surrey. But who would you say in the world of cricket were your cricketing inspirations? Who did you look up to in the cricketing world?
It probably was my dad. My dad played for the first team for the club that, he was playing with. Just a local village team that played Premier League in North Staffs, in the North Staffs League. But my uncle played, my dad's best friend played, his kids played, my best mates all played at the same club. So pretty much got into it, and then that was all I sort of knew until as I was about 10, 11, and then it was the 05 Ashes. So it was watching that on TV. Like the obvious answer was, like, obviously it was Flintoff's Ashes. It was pretty much who I was, like, not obsessed with, but he was the one that you wanted to watch, him and Peterson trying to smack the Aussies all around Edgbaston and Old Trafford. And so, yeah, a bit of a common answer, really, but that was when I first really got hooked on cricket, was watching that series.
Every time, innit?
Yep.
Every time. Always miss out on the 2005 Ashes, and then I guess says the 2005 Ashes was great. We were alive for it. We just too young. I was like 3, I think, or 4.
We had 2009 though. We had Monty Panesar and Anderson with a great escape in Cardiff.
Yeah, we did indeed.
So and Totti's debut.
A classic on Sky Sports as well, isn't it?
Yeah, you can't beat one of those Ashes classics, can you, on Sky Sports?
I know.
It doesn't fit on the screen, so it like puts the things on the side. Yeah, you can't beat that. You can't beat it on a boring weekend or something when there's no football on. Yeah. So, I mean, would you say that Peterson and Flintoff were your like professional cricketing heroes, or was there someone else, Tom, who you would pick up?
Yeah, I'd probably say so, because I always like my batting and my bowling. So, like, it was whoever really was in the limelight at that sort of age, which was to be honest, Peterson for his batting.
Yeah, fair enough.
Probably Callis. Callis would be the other one. Looking back at some of his clips, is ridiculous how, you know, he batted in the top four and took all those wickets and very good.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair enough. Obviously, all three of them, Peterson, Flintoff, Callis, the quality players, and you pay to watch them, don't you? Really do. They were phenomenal. Yeah. But let's talk a bit about yourself now, Tom, as a cricketer. How would you describe your game?
I'd say I probably started out as, you know, a bowler, really, and then, well, hopefully I'm developing into more of like a genuine all-rounder. That's how I see myself. But just in general, as a cricketer, just try and work hard. Like, if I'm batting, try and give it my all. If I'm bowling, try and give it my all in the field. You know, the same. I don't see myself as like a one-dimensional cricketer. Try and contribute in all three dimensions of each format, really.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, I guess that's a pretty good attitude for anyone to take into anything, is maximum. I guess it sounds a bit like obvious, but maximum effort is all you can really do, isn't it?
Yeah,
and
definitely.
Then everything else is kind of in maybe in other people's hands.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of mentioned there a few formats. What would you say your favourite format is?
I probably still do prefer 4-day cricket, the classic. That's where I've played my most games. I'm probably much more used to playing with a red ball, but the white ball cricket that I have played sort of really in the last 2 years, I've really enjoyed, like the 50 over stuff and the T20 stuff that I played last year. I mean, well, this last season was my, you know, the first game that I played for Leicester was my T20 debut, and like at 25, that's probably pretty rare at the moment. Young guys are getting thrown in, you know, 18, 19 T20 sides, and I've had to wait quite a long time really to play my first T20 game. But I thoroughly enjoyed this year with the T20 cricket, and it's definitely something that I want to continue improving at and really working hard at.
Well, yeah, we'll talk about that in due course, Tom, because, yeah, some pretty memorable performances in the 2020 season, to say the least, against a certain team from the Midlands, which will remain unnamed for the moment. But, yeah, you mentioned there about first class, and, of course, I think that's a wonderful attitude for any modern cricketer because, I mean, in my view, for many traditionalists as well, it's the purest format of the game. It's the one that we're almost brought up with here in England. So just going back to your debut then, Tom, for Derbyshire, this would have been. What do you remember from your first-class debut?
I remember being really nervous. I was actually sat in the Hilton in Leicester, because obviously my debut was against Leicester at Grace Road for Derby. And virtually, I was guaranteed, I was like, in my head, you know, I'm not going to play. There's a couple of other bowlers in that are probably ahead of me. And then the morning of the game, Pop, who's obviously now at Warwickshire, told me that I was going to I was going to be playing. Instantly, like, it was a good job I'd had my breakfast before, because there was no way I'd been able to eat. I was pretty much like, I was extremely nervous up until I'd probably bowled my first two overs, and then I sort of settled into it. But I can remember bowling my first over at Josh Cobb, who's obviously white ball captain now at Northants. And he sort of bowled, it was my first over was up the hill at Grace Road, and I was like, I literally felt like I was bowling 20 mile an hour at him. And he blocked my first ball, and the next ball was slightly wider, and he just crunched it through the covers. And I was like, oh, brilliant, right. Just have to claw my way and build my way into it. But it was all right. It was a good one to just get out of the way, because I think, from what I seem to remember of the game, Dave Wainwright got 5 for 100, and we won, like, none down. I think Paul Borrington and I can't remember who else opened batting with Boz in the fourth innings, but I think we won comfortably in the end, which was quite pleasing. One of the few wins I got actually for Derby in 4 day cricket, came on my debut.
Well, Tom, that is pretty impressive. Yeah, you're spot on there. Dave Wainwright getting 109. And of course, yeah, you had a bit of a partnership with him, scored 40 from 103 balls. What's that like being out in the middle, obviously, on your first class debut?
Yeah, it was. I mean, it was good. I was actually much more like comfortable. I sort of no expectations with my batting, sort of fresh into first class cricket. Whereas obviously I was picked for my bowling, so I had a bit more pressure on that. But I was quite comfortable batting, and obviously Dave was like a gritty, like, little batter, like, awkward to bowl at, and he was smashing them at the time, and I just came in and just had fun pretty much. And I was a bit of a blocker, you know, like, very limited shots early on. Pretty much had a cover drive and that was it. But it was quite a good debut, because he relaxed once that I got that innings out of the way and I sort of contributed to the game. I felt much more comfortable.
Oh yeah, that's understandable as well, isn't it? Yeah. And to be fair, yeah, good memories for Derbyshire fans. 9-wicket win at Grace Road. Pretty convincing, that. The only thing that you didn't get, Tom, in that game, though, was a wicket. So do you remember who your first county championship wicket actually was? It's a big name.
Big name. Hashim Amla the next week against Surrey.
Correct,
Definitely won that. I remember that one.
That's a seriously good first wicket. I reckon that's up there with one of the best first wickets you could get in county cricket, easily. That's a seriously good wicket to get. How was he out?
LBW.
Do you reckon it was out?
Oh yeah, it was out. And I actually, this is probably an even better thing, was the night, I think I bowled it in the night before, and it was like my first few overs, and I hit him on the pad the night before, and I thought he got an inside edge, and everyone else went off and I didn't appeal, and he didn't get an inside edge on it, and it was stone dead the night before, and I didn't appeal. And then the next morning, like a few overs in, thankfully I got him out. I actually got Pop shouted at me that night because I didn't appeal and he was out.
You ever do that now? Just not appeal? You always appeal now?
Oh no, you got every time now. Even if there's a half chance, I've got
learn that lesson, don't you?
Nearly learned it the hard way. If Hashim would have got 100 the next day.
Jeez.
Yeah, that wouldn't have been... That would not have been good.
No, that had not been a good one to live down.
No. But you got him out.
Exactly. And eventually, talking of getting people out as well, in the same innings, you got out Chris Tremlett. Now, I just wanted to bring this up. Have either of you two seen Chris Tremlett nowadays?
Yes.
Yes, huge.
Big fella. Looks like outrageous. The mountain from Game of Thrones, doesn't he?
Yeah, he's massive. I think I got them out caught fly slip or something that game. I think they were trying to smack it towards the back end, and it was either Wes or Wayne Madsen had one slip and virtually everyone else on the boundary, and then they decided to just go off to fly slip, and I think that he got like a big top edge and was caught fly slip. Not the best one to admit to. I'd prefer to say that, you know, I ripped his off stump out. But
of course, yeah, as a bowler.
Still got a test cricketer out.
Right.
Two test cricketers out of your first two wickets. Not exactly bad going, is it?
No.
But we briefly mentioned lessons there in terms of, like, in a more jokey way of appealing all the time. But in a more serious manner, what lessons would you say you learned from your first season in county cricket?
I'd say that it's like, it's hard work. You don't really think about it, but that first season I was 17 or 18, and I think I played five weeks on the bounce, like fresh out of playing very little second team cricket, just playing club cricket on a Saturday where, you know, the maximum sort of amount of overs you'd bowl would be, I don't know, 15 or so. And I just learned that, you know, you've got to have a lot of, like, bowling endurance. You've got to be able to hold your positions. You've got to be really, like, consistent, because your margin for error in first-class cricket, obviously, and, well, as I sort of grew up, your margin for error in club cricket's massive. Going to, like, academy cricket just gets smaller and smaller and smaller. So that was probably the biggest lesson, like, balls that, you know, I'd thought were, you know, decent balls were getting smacked in first-class cricket. So you have to sort of learn quickly, I'd say.
Did you find that really difficult in terms of those, like, early days in county cricket? As in, it's a big step up, isn't it?
Yeah. It was probably good that it happened quickly, because you see the difference. Like, I played probably maybe half a season of academy cricket, and then played maybe, I don't know, five or six second team games, and that was pretty much straight in. So you go up the stages really quickly. So you learn, you have to learn quickly. So those first five games, I remember them being like tough games, like a real slog. And by the time I got to the fifth game, Pop, who was head coach at the time, was just like, you need a rest, don't you? Like, mentally. I was just like, yeah, like every week you're like, oh my God, like, who are we playing this week and where are we travelling? And remember, it's like, it's the first time, 18-year-old, you don't really go, like, we were on a coach for 3 hours down to Kent, and then the next day you'd play against, you know, whoever. And it was tough.
Yeah, and like you say, you know, it must have been very tough. You're bowling to guys like Hashim Amla and things like that. So as a young lad, I bet that was so tough. Be, you know, considering the quick transition that you'd had into professional cricket, I can't imagine how tough that would have been when you're going to bowl at guys like Hashim Amla. I bet that was pretty tough.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about your move to Leicestershire now. So how did that move come about from Derbyshire to Leicestershire?
Well, it came about because I was essentially getting released by Derby. So I got told towards the end of that season. It was probably about, there was a game in the middle of the T20 games. I can't remember what year it was. It might have been 2017 or 18. That we played Notts at Trenbridge. We played Notts at Derby, and Alex Hales got 200 and something. And I remember playing, and I bowled okay, but Alex Hales got a million. It was like bowling at a guy who was batting with a fence in his hand.
That just as he was about to get called up to the England Test side? It was kind of time period, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, he got. I mean, he got 200, and he was smacking it. It was one of Chris Reed's last games. Yeah, and I can remember it was probably about 2 weeks after that. I got told that I was not going to be in the future plans at the club, and I had a year left. I had a year left on my contract at the time, and basically I was just like blown away, like, you know, I couldn't believe it was happening. And as it got to sort of Christmas time, I'd not really been told, like, neither here or there what was happening, so I was just rolling along with it, just training. And so obviously it was a quiet period there before Christmas, like the back end of the season was done. It was just gym training, winter training. But yeah, it was just before Christmas, I just got a phone call saying, you know, we've got a payout ready for you if you want to take it. You know, you're not going to play any cricket next year. And I was just like, wow, I can't believe this is happening. So my agent, and who's a good family friend, Darren Long, you know, spoke to the club and said, you know, what's going on? Like, why is this happening? And they were just like, yeah, Derby were just like, you know, it's not the direction we want to go. Tom's not in the future plans. You know, we think he should take this deal. So I did, because that was what was going on. And then literally a few days later, just by chance, well, not really by chance, but John Sadler, who had moved as coach from Derby to Leicester, heard what was going on and rung me straight away and said, you know, Leicester, we want to offer you something. You know, I've obviously, Sads was one of the main people that had helped me develop at Derby. Of Derby were going through a bit of a transition period, should we say, at the time, where they were basically, they got rid of all their coaching staff and had the director of cricket and then the Palladino at the time stepped into like a bowling coach role, and they had Steve Stubbins, who was like a coach, sort of a head coach, sort of facilitator sort of thing, who ran the sessions. But that was pretty much it regarding like coaching staff. So they pumped quite a lot of their money into signing overseas players. So that year after, they had like, they signed Ravi Rampal, Duane Oliver, Wahab Riaz. They still had Huddersfield Ewan. So they got rid of quite a few youngsters that year. So there was me, Ben Cotton, Rob Hemmings, Greg Cork, Will Davis. It happened to the same the year after, who joined Leicester as well. So yeah, it was a bit of a tough period, really. But then by chance it led me, you know, Sads phoned me and said, you know, we want you to sign at Leicester. So by the time I was released at Derby in December, I was signed again from the 1st of January for Leicester. So that's how it sort of came about.
Well, just hearing that, Tom, I imagine that would have been extremely difficult. And this is going to be a difficult question, I'm going to be honest. But do you kind of wish that your time at Derbyshire ended differently? Because that sounds very almost sudden, I suppose. It's not a very nice way to leave the club.
Abrupt, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, to be honest, I don't really know what was going on. I know that they were going, they saw a different direction for a few years. Like, the coaching staff kept changing and, you know, they weren't really settled. So they went down a route of trying to look for immediate results. So they signed like some high profile names and good overseas, and they needed to let that happen. They needed to release guys. I was one of the younger players on the staff at the time. So was the guys around me who got released. If they didn't see you contributing like massively that next season, I think, you know, you were under the pump a bit, and that's sort of the decision that they made. And yeah, to be honest, I feel a little bit sad, because it was a club that, you know, I loved as a kid, and I had my first academy session there at like 14, 15. You know, Carl Cricken and Howard Dytham at the time, who were academy coaches, like, I had an amazing academy experience with Derby, who were probably one of the best academies in the country at the time. Had an amazing like journey through that, and then signed my first professional deal at, well, summer deal at 17, and then first professional contract at 18. It was a bit of a, it was an ending that I didn't really see coming, which is probably the best way to describe it.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, that was, just sounded like a terrible way to almost end your stint with Derbyshire. But of course, pastures are new at Leicestershire, and you mentioned there Sadler. I mean, just hearing that passage there, obviously he's had a big role to play in your development as a professional cricketer. How instrumental would you say that Sads has been in developing the Tom Taylor that we see out on the pitch today?
Massively. I can't thank him enough, really, and continue to do so, because obviously he's coach at Northants now as well. So he was a big, you know, he was a big sort of attraction to Northants, because I know Sads really well, and, you know, he spoke really highly of Northants, so that was, you know, a big reason why I joined there. But sort of, especially, I've done a lot of batting sessions with Sads, so a lot of specific batting work I would have to thank him for, as well as dips at Leicester and Nico as well. So I mean, my time at Leicester was also amazing, especially the people in the club, Tom Smith, Dips, Nico, they're all, you know, amazing coaches, as well as Matt Mason, who was the bowling coach for the first year as well. I did a lot of work with him. So, you know, exactly like you say, like when I finished at Derby, it was kind of like a pastures new thing, like, let's move on to the next sort of stage of my career.
Fair enough. And I suppose that's the best outlook to have, isn't it, when you go through, obviously, that disappointment. And to be fair, I mean, since that, you've gone from strength to strength. And of course, I did allude to it earlier, we are going to talk about 2020. Don't worry, Northants fans. I know you're waiting for that game against Birmingham at Edgbaston. I can sense it already. But just before we get onto that, okay, we have to talk about how that move actually materialised in the first place. Because it was, I want to say, almost rumoured, I suppose. George Dobell wrote about it on Crick Info. He mentioned my club, Warwickshire. I think he mentioned Notts as well, potentially. And then Northants was the third one. And that's where you ultimately ended up, Tom. But how did that move come about? How did you find out that you're going to be playing at Wantage Road in 2020?
I mean, it was quite a drawn-out process, really. I never saw it happening when I was playing for, before my back injury at Leicester. I didn't really see moving, you know, at all. You know, I wanted to sign a new contract at Leicester, and there was a lot of back and forth with that, and I couldn't really see it happening at the time. But I just sort of, through no fault of really anyone's, there was a few things that happened at Leicester with changes of chief executives at the time. I think they went through three chief executives in the space of like 2 years, maybe even a year, because obviously I signed under Wasim, and then there was Karen and a few other people. So yeah, I had a few contract offers from Leicester, but none that were agreed, really. There's always something, you know, different at either end that, you know, both parties wanted. And then I sort of found myself in my last year of my contract. And then at that point, if, you know, as you mentioned, a couple of clubs, you know, were interested and approached in the right way and spoke to Darren. And that was sort of how things materialised, by speaking to Darren, and then obviously Sads, who I'm close with anyway, had phoned me up and said, you know, we're going to be interested at Northants. And I met them a couple of times, and everything seemed like it was really good. You know, I trust Sads' opinion a lot. He'd obviously made his coaching move to Northants from Leicester. And he said, you know, it's a good group, a really talented group, and, you know, a lot of senior players that are really ready to win and want to win trophies. And, you know, they sign impressive overseas players. So, and that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to ultimately be as competitive as I could be, because I'm coming into sort of the meat of my career now, really. If I want to be doing anything, you know, playing, I wanted to play in the first division. That was another thing. When things do go back to the County Championship, Northants went up in 2019, was it? So that was also another thing. I wanted to try and test myself in the first division. So you hear a lot of things about, you know, when you play in the second division, you hear a lot of how much it's a step up again to go and play consistently in the first division. And that's something I wanted to challenge myself with as well. So, you know, there was a lot of things that attracted me to Northants, and that's ultimately why the move happened.
Well, fair enough. And I think it's fair to say that in 2020, I think that move paid off for a multitude of reasons. But of course, we did see when we made the announcement that you're going to come onto the podcast, Tom, obviously there were some Leicestershire fans who were questioning why you actually left Leicestershire. So did you get any stick for that move from the Leicester fans, or, I don't know, was it almost a smooth transition to Wantage Road?
I mean, it was a smooth transition personally, and, you know, everyone at Leicestershire were amazing about it, because obviously I went on loan. I was up front with Leicester and spoke to Nico and the coaches there about, you know, what I was going to do, you know, a couple of weeks before it happened, a week before it happened. And I said that I wanted to continue playing for Leicester as long as I possibly could, you know, contribute to hopefully qualifying for the T20s with Leicester. We won a game off the last four. Ben Mike hit a six on the last four against Yorkshire to keep us going. And then we were getting ready for the next game, and Nico said, you know, we're gonna we're going to leave you out because, you know, you've told us about you wanting to leave and go to Northants. And I said, listen, that, you know, that's fine. It's absolutely fine. Would you mind if I go on loan and, you know, try and finish the competition with Northants, because they were also trying to qualify for the quarterfinal. And he said, yeah, you know, he said, yeah, that's, you know, that's fine. So it was really smooth, like, regarding everyone who was there in the club. I know I copped a little bit of stick on Twitter from the Leicestershire fans, but I think that was always to be expected. A lot of people said that it was a bit of a sideways move. But, you know, for the reasons that I've explained, that, you know, I don't think that, although it's not a test ground, I think regarding certain other things, you know, when, you know, they're going to play in the first division, when hopefully things go back to normal, they really do have a good crack at the white ball competitions, and they've got a brilliant white ball record. So in order to be, you know, competitive and winning trophies, and, you know, I see myself, you know, there's more likely chances of that happening, and, you know, with me in a Northants shirt, I think, and that's just my opinion.
Fair enough, Tom. Yeah, and as you said, it is a very, very exciting group at Wantage Road, I think, at the moment, obviously boosted by the president himself, Mohamed Nabi, who'll be coming for the 2021 season. But yeah, should be an exciting time, I think, for the Steelbacks.
Yeah, I mean, I think so. Like, that's definitely our, you know, our plans. You know, we had the lads had a decent to a good campaign probably last year, and they, you know, we got to the quarterfinals, but it should have been, you know, a lot easier than it was. You know, Northants won the first five games, and they were looking like, you know, qualifying top of the group, and then, you know, the COVID situation happened where one of the players, I think, got COVID, and they had to have a week of isolation or no training or something like that. And then I think they lost the next four or five games pretty much. So that was a little hurdle. And then, you know, there was a few guys that didn't have their greatest campaigns, and, you know, won't have a problem with admitting that. So that, you know, the group managed to get to the quarterfinals with perhaps two or three batters not performing, and, you know, one or two bowlers feeling like they, you know, they could have done things differently. So regarding, like, signing Nabi, that's an unbelievable addition to the team. And hopefully the team can have better individual competitions. I think, you know, there's no reason why we can't be at finals day next year.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think Northants look very, very strong. And yeah, I mean, that obviously Paul Stirling was around this year, and him and Richard Levy at the top of the order is a very powerful top order. That's, yeah, I bet that gave a few bowlers some nightmares in a powerful hitter.
They're two guys that you don't want to be bowling to, and then you've got people like Josh Cobb coming in at three, and Adam Rossington, yeah, who's previously, you know, done a similar role to Levy and Stirling, you know, smacking it at the top of the order in the power play as well. So we've got so many power hitters and guys that can really take people down. So yeah, it's quite a scary lineup to bowl to. Put pen to paper and try and bowl at that lineup. It's a tough one.
Yeah, it's a nice lineup to be on the side of. Definitely. To be on the same team as, for sure. Yeah, but yeah, no, I would definitely agree with that. Northants look very strong going into next year in all formats. But let's talk about your 2020 season personally, Tom. What would you say your highlight is? And I reckon there may be one here that you say, and we're definitely going to talk about it later anyway, aren't we, Aaron? But, yeah. What would you say your personal highlight has been from 2020?
There was probably a couple of highlights. I mean, to be honest, starting out the campaign like Leicester did, we played against Lancashire at Worcester. It was a bit of a strange one, really, playing, I think it was an away game at Worcester, but we also
were at home
against Worcester as well, like at Worcester against Lancs. But yeah, that was definitely a highlight, because that was a good four day win. And also in that game, I got to play with like a really good friend in Ben Slater, who came on loan from Notts, who had an unbelievable game as well. So sort of the combination of winning for Leicester and sort of having him play and do well as well, that was probably a highlight. And then the other highlight was probably the one that Aaron doesn't want to talk about, which was my Northants debut.
Well, to be fair, we have to talk about it. And even, you know what, I'm in here with my Warwickshire shirt on. You know, as a cricket fan looking back, my word, what a debut that was. I mean, for a neutral, that would have been absolutely incredible. And I suppose for a Northants fan as well, would have been mind-blowing, spectacular, sensational. I could throw the entire thesaurus at you, Tom, and there may not be a word that best describes that debut. But for those who don't know, Tom, you came in for that fateful day at Edgbaston. So in the first innings, you took figures of 2 for 38 from 4 overs. You dismissed Rob Yates and Will Rhodes in quick succession. The Will Rhodes one in particular, I think that was a golden duck or a two-ball duck, wasn't it? Were they back to back?
Yeah, first. Yeah, I think it was. Yeah, I think I had my I think I had a hat trick ball at Hay.
Yes, because we were 20 for 4.
Yes, that was another one that I was nervous. Although it couldn't have gone much worse because I think my first ball went for 6. I think my first ball went for 6. I bowled the third over, I think. My first ball went for 6, and then luckily, you know, his next one went straight up, and then I bowled a decent ball to Rhodesy, and he missed it.
I'd say more than a decent one. It was a good delivery, that. I'll give you that. It was a very, very nice bit of bowling. So, yeah, that was the first innings, and then came the second innings, and I'm just thinking back. Northants needed 100 from 7 overs, and I was pretty confident at this point. I can't lie. We're into the tail. Obviously, Tom, you come into bat, strutting to the crease. And then, yeah, I suppose, I know it's a bit cliche, but the rest was history. 59 out from 27 balls. And then you had Graham White as well in the middle, okay, who averages less than 20 in his career, scoring 37 from about 19 balls. I mean, you just can write it. I suppose as a Warwickshire fan, it was just bound to happen, wasn't it? And Northants as well, out of form. You'd lost 4 games in a row. You come to Edgbaston. We needed one win, okay, because our net run rate was terrible. And yeah, it all just fell to pieces, didn't it? But yeah, Tom, I must admit, obviously at the time, wasn't too happy as a Warwickshire fan, but my word, that was an incredible debut. And I'm guessing you're immensely proud of that.
Oh yeah, definitely. Like, it was probably one of the proudest, like, moments of my career. Like, definitely. Because obviously going into a new team where you don't know too many people, you want to contribute to the game, really. And bowling, I felt like I did that. I bowled, you know, two overs early doors, got a couple of wickets, and then bowled at the death to Hose, who'd got a brilliant 100. So that was tough going. And yeah, from really when I came to the crease, I had just no expectation of anything, of what I was going to do. You know, I just wanted to, you know, try and hit really strong shots and just try and hit the ball hard. And luckily it was my day, and they bowled it in the areas that I thought they were going to bowl into.
You mentioned, obviously, you're on a hat-trick in that game. Have you ever had a hat-trick before in any kind of cricket across your whole life?
Yeah, I had one really early, actually. I had one like when I was 10 or 11 in the district. And I think I had one when I was about 15 or 16.
You've had two?
I think I've got three. Well, one was... Well, I'm not sure if one counts. One was in the second team for Derby. And we were playing on the days where you play two T20s in a day.
Yes, yeah.
So I had two at the end of an innings, and then I had one first ball of the next game.
Yeah, that counts. It does. If you got a wicket on the last ball of the two wickets in the last ball of the T20 blast, last two balls, to win the title, and then next season, wicket on your first ball, you got a hat-trick. It carries over. Yeah. I don't know who would remember that. But it definitely carries out.
I didn't remember at the time, and then the scorer came to me after the game and went, "Oh, do you realise you got a hat trick today?" I was like, "No."
Well, there you go then.
Yeah, so three.
You've had three. A hat trick of hat tricks, pretty good.
Yeah.
Not
indeed,
bad.
Yeah. Better than mine. Still at zero. What about you, Joe? Have you ever had one?
I've had one. Under nines. Full and straight. Can't beat it. Don't really know if it counts. I've got the match ball in
it counts then.
Somewhere. Yeah. So, yeah, I've had a hat trick. Yeah, nice. It's for the elite hat tricks, aren't they, Tom?
Yeah, only between the club in this
gap. See, Joe, get me up to your local club, and I'll join the club very, very shortly. Get a fiver in six balls. But yeah, Tom, in that little passage as well, you also touched upon that being a very, very proud moment for yourself. But of course, in county cricket, would you say that that was the pinnacle, or would you say that there's been another moment which has, I don't know, almost been a very, very big highlight as well?
I think probably my two best matches probably of my career have come up probably in the last 2 years against Warwickshire, really. The year before in the one day game, I think I got 98 not out.
Red Inca, yep.
We won that game, and I think I got 3 wickets and a couple of catches as well. So that was like a game where I feel like I contributed a hell of a lot to that win. And then I'd say probably my other highlight was early on in my career, was winning the second team one day trophy with Derby, because that was in a team where I pretty much played all the games, worked all season for it, and I was playing with a lot of guys who I'd grown up with in the academy. So that was a pretty cool moment as well, winning a trophy with those. That was good fun.
Yeah, but that was a pretty special moment as well, winning the second 11 trophy. Because yeah, as you say, you know, you'd done it with guys who you'd known for years, so that was pretty
good. Yeah, winning that, we played Durham away, and they had a good side. You know, Keaton Jennings was opening the batting for them in their second team, and it was a good game. You know, it was a good game. We got some runs, and then they were looking like chasing them down, and managed to drag it back. And it was a good night in Newcastle after the game. So it was a good place to win a trophy.
But I mean, we mentioned proudest moments there. What would you say some of your toughest moments have been so far in county cricket?
I mean, definitely that sort of period at Derby towards the end of my time there. That was probably the toughest moment. I mean, it got to the stages where you were going in and, you know, people wouldn't really talk to you, and, you know, everyone sort of knew your situation, who was involved with the club. You know, the coaches knew at the time, you know, the senior players knew. So you wouldn't really get spoken to. You know, they would really be wondering why you were there, to be honest. So that was a really tough time. And then there was also, you know, there's also been two bad back injuries that I've come back from, missed 9 months just through over bowling, really, which is frustrating, because you know, when you're fit, you want to be bowling and playing as much as you possibly can. And then ultimately that can be, you know, that can be your downfall. And that certainly was the downfall for my last one. I think I played all the games, and I think I rested one day game against Lancashire at Old Trafford, and all the other games, you know, I'd played and bowled a lot of overs, and then ultimately that was my downfall. So they, you know, their injuries are always tough. The year before, I was frustrated because I got hit on the foot when I was batting in my first year when I signed for Leicester. I didn't really think much of it. I got hit on the foot playing a second team T20 game by Jared Warner, who's just signed. He's just signed for Gloucester. I didn't really think much of it, and bowled in the second inning. We batted first. I bowled in the second innings. And then towards the end of the game, my foot was massive. I went for a scan and they didn't really pick anything up. And I had two breaks in my foot, and I reckon I'd bowled for another month on it, just without really knowing. So that sort of ruined my first year. Played a lot of second team cricket, bowling with a broken foot, not really knowing. And it was actually a game against Lancs, Northern, I think it was, in the second team, where, you know, my ankle was really hurting, my foot. And I got it strapped for the first time. And bowling in that game, it just got worse and worse because of the pressure with it being strapped up for the first time. It had just nowhere to go. And it just got worse and worse. And I had to get another scan on it and realised it was broken in two places. So I managed to get back, luckily. I managed to sort of sort it out and made my debut that year, the last game against Glamorgan. So I'm glad I made like my first class debut for Leicester that year, and we played against Glamorgan at Swaylack. I think it was the last game of the season, and I managed to make it back for that game. But if it wasn't for that injury, you know, I'd hope to have played more in that first year, really. And then, like I said, I've got another serious injury in the next year. It's just bad luck. It's just what happens with bowlers, I reckon, in first-class cricket, really. It's a shame.
Yeah. Yeah, and I can't even imagine how frustrating that must have been for yourself. And obviously, as you say, for the doctors not to pick up a break like that in your foot, or multiple breaks in your foot, that must have just been so frustrating,
yeah,
really.
It's a really strange one, because I was getting treatment and stuff for it. It was like ultrasound treatment, and normally if you've got a break somewhere, you do an ultrasound, it would hurt because it vibrates and all that, and I wasn't really feeling anything. It was literally, I didn't really feel anything until we got it strapped, and I was bowling on it when it was strapped, and then things just got worse. But yeah, the breaks were already there, apparently. So just one of those things that couldn't really have been helped, but obviously it was very disappointing at a time, realising I was going to be another two months out of the year to wait for those to heal.
Yeah, and I think, you know, anyone who has injuries would probably just find it so hard being on the sidelines. I bet, I don't know if this is like, if this is for you, but I think some people probably find it, you know, frustrating being able to watch cricket and not being able to have an impact on the game. So
those when you're injured for sort of those lengthy periods of time, like those two back injuries were nearly each time like 9 months of cricket, and obviously that foot injury was a couple of months in the middle of the season. But that's the most frustrating thing. You're coming in and seeing the lads pretty much all the time, but yet they're off playing and training and doing all the things that you want to be doing, and you're sat in the physio room doing, you know, really, really basic, especially the back injuries, really basic rehab that's, you know, you have to do to build yourself up again. But that's definitely the most frustrating thing about being injured, is the time that's spent, you know, doing the rehab and seeing everyone else going and playing and contributing. You know, when you're injured in the season, there's nothing worse.
Yeah, I mean, documentaries like that have been on Amazon Prime and things like that, and Netflix have shown that, I think, from watching that, is you can tell almost like an inside look at how a sportsman feel when they're injured. And I can't even imagine how frustrating that is.
Definitely. I don't know if they've seen the Andy Murray documentary on Netflix about his hip and everything that he's gone through with that, but it's horrendous. Like the videos that he made where he's nearly saying he's got to retire and, you know, not be able to play the game that he's, you know, he loves so much. It's terrible.
Yeah, and just as you say, tough time for any sports person who's injured. It really is. So let's talk a little bit now, Tom, about some more personal battles that you've had on the field. So who would you say the toughest batter that you've had to bowl to is, and the toughest bowler that you've had to face is?
Toughest batter,
Sam Hain.
Well, thankfully, I didn't have to bowl it in too much. But he would have been. I think the toughest bowler, the toughest competitor that has ever bowled to me, I'd say, is a bit of a rogue one, really. But I'd say it's Doug Bollinger.
Ooh, the Aussie.
The Aussie guy. He was at Kent when I made it. Was like my third or fourth game. But I was like young, 18 years old, whatever, quite naive. And he bowled a couple of quick spells at me when I played Derby at Kent, and he ran downhill at Canterbury and hit me a couple of times. And I was, like I say, naive, had no chest pad, I was like scared, like bricking it when I was batting. So that was he was probably the toughest competitor. Like he was at you all the time, and he didn't really care, because he was a
typical Aussie fast bowler.
Yeah, it didn't help. He was a bit of a fruit loop as well. So he was like, you know, staring. You know, he's like doing all the typical Aussie fast bowler stuff. He was staring at you, he was having a word. Like it was a proper battle, and you felt it when you were like at the non-striker's end, and that was probably the toughest bowling I faced. It's hard to say when you're bowling, you bowled at so many guys that they're all, you could pretty much go around and say that any of the top six that you bowl at, everyone is always like, you know, amazing to bowl at. I'd say probably early on there was, I can remember playing that game against Surrey where I got Amla, and Solanke was I think Amla batted three and he batted five or something like that. So he came in and I was bowling. And we had Crossy, who's Gareth Cross from Lancs, who'd moved to Derby at the time. And Vic was coming towards the end of his career at Surrey. And I was bowling okay. And I can remember beating the bat a couple of times. And I think Crossy had a word with him saying, you know, you're letting this young guy bowl at you. Come on, you know, you're a really good batter. And literally my next three balls, he walked at me and hit me into the Virgin gym at Derby. Literally, I was bowling well and my next three balls went for six and pretty much straight over side screen. So that was a bit of an eye opener as well. I don't think I've ever said this to Crossy, but I'm annoyed at him that he sledged Vic on that occasion. Well, no,
it cost you 18 runs.
Yeah, it cost me 18 runs to be fair. But it's hard to pinpoint who the toughest is that you've bowled at, because you bowl against so many good players.
That's fair enough. Yeah, Vikram Solanki, good choice there. But then let's talk about 2021 then, Tom. Let's talk a bit heading into the future then. Next season, obviously, fingers crossed, we'll have a full season. Apparently the fixtures are coming out tomorrow as well, which is brilliant news for us as County fans. But in terms of next season then in mind, what are you looking to improve upon in your personal game? What skills are you looking to develop further in 2021?
I think a lot of it will definitely revolve around white ball skills. Sort of my introduction into T20 cricket sort of has gone okay this year. But I felt like my bowling is definitely somewhere I can improve on to become like a genuine all-rounder in white ball cricket. I think, you know, you've got to really contribute and, you know, you've got to average sort of less than, you know, probably around 20, you know, getting your economy rate down, take wickets, especially in T20 cricket, taking wickets is massive. So I think just developing white ball skills will be my work on sort of for after Christmas, heading into the new season. I've got a great bowling coach for that in Chris Liddell, who's got all the tricks in the book regarding white ball bowling. So I'm looking forward to that.
Do you have any specific areas of like a specific variation that you're looking to develop? Maybe a knuckleball, for example.
Yeah, probably. I mean, I'm probably looking to develop my knuckleball a little bit further. I've sort of worked on a knuckleball for a couple of years, but I'm not really confident in.
Have you ever bowled it in a match?
Game. I've bowled it a couple of times and with varied results. I think one's gone for six, and then I bowled a couple of dot balls as well this year with it. But I think I'd probably continue working on that, and then continue on working on back of the hand slow ball, because I've been trying to master that for a couple of years now. But I'm looking forward to trying to nail down those two aspects of my white ball bowling, definitely.
Yeah, fair enough. And would you say that white ball skills in terms of 50 over cricket and T20 cricket in batting and bowling wise, would you say they're totally transferable for you, or would you say you have to sort of alter your game depending on which format you're playing?
I mean, definitely, I'd say they're definitely transferable. If you're bowling in a T20 game, you know, your stop ball, your best ball is still the most threatening early doors, of which you probably bowl a lot of that in the 50 over stuff. You know, the majority of, if you open the bowling in 50 over cricket, you know, the majority of your balls are going to be your best stop ball, you know, your best red ball, if really your best red ball. So a lot of that is transferable. And then obviously in T20, it's all about, you know, your skills, stuff at the deck, you know, your work at the deck, slow ball, which is transferable definitely to 50 over cricket towards the end, because you're going to look at teams, especially this year, I think teams are going to get really big scores, and you've seen that pretty much all over the world, really. Scores are getting bigger and bigger, and I think that'll continue to happen, really.
Yeah. I mean, I agree with that. Par scores, no matter what wicket you're playing on, I feel like it's always going up. And I feel like, obviously, like a few years back, if you're getting 150, then you've done a pretty good job, and now it's sort of 180, 190, and you've hit the mark there. So yeah, I mean, I would definitely agree with that. But overall, in sort of like the rest of your cricket career, is there any main ambitions that you have, or anything that you really want to achieve?
My main motivation is winning trophies, to be honest. And that's something that I really want to achieve. I've been in a lot of teams where, unfortunately, we've been close, but to be in a good team, but we've just been just short of the mark, really. So I'm looking forward to trying to be a sort of a really competitive team that are really tough to beat, and being in that habit of winning, because that's where you're going to be moving on to finals and finals day. That's something that I'd love to do. But yeah, winning trophies, really, that's all my main ambition. I really don't want to have a county career where you come away with it with no trophy, or no final or anything like that. That I think I would be disappointed if I didn't push myself to try and achieve a trophy from a career that's so guys go whole careers without winning trophies, without playing a final, and that I would hate for that I'd hate for that to happen. I'd love to be able to be in a final and try and win a trophy.
Fair enough. Yeah. Nice ambitions those, Tom. And of course, we wish you the very best of luck with that here at the County Cricket Podcast. No, yep, hopefully, fingers crossed for the Northants fans as well. The Steelbacks can make it, I don't know, to finals day against the Bears, more likely than not. But yes, we do wish you the best of luck with that, Tom, of course. Yeah, best of luck in the remainder of your county career. Still got many, many years left. And of course, we have no doubt that you'll achieve those ambitions at some point. But that is it pretty much for our main segment then. So before we move on to teammates, which is a segment which is proving to be very, very popular on the County Cricket Podcast, we have got one fan question, and we touched upon this briefly before recording the podcast, and that is from Rob Radford. Now, his question is, a rare non-Beards Krogfest victory or your professional cricket debut, what was your life highlight this far? So, Tom, just before we talk and I'll answer that question, do you just want to explain what Krogfest actually is for the listeners out there?
Yeah, so it's basically a football match that happens in Barlaston, which is where my local cricket club is and where my family live and all my friends. So it basically happens on the 27th of December, and it's just a massive football game that could have anywhere between 15 and 20 people, 30 people there, on a cold, wet, cold, wet morning, often snowing and frosty. And we just have a game of football, which is Beards versus non-Beards, old versus young, the classic. Sort of split them up, one team wears bibs, and it's carnage. To say the least, it's carnage.
Sounds like a lot of fun, though. I must admit, we don't have anything like that in rural Warwickshire.
What position do you tend to play, Tom?
Definitely out on the wing, out of trouble. If you go in anywhere near the middle of the pitch is where you get clattered. But yeah, anywhere on the wing, it's where the grass stays relatively grassy. Anywhere towards the middle of the pitch is like a bog, and a lot of people go down, and there's anything can happen in there. So out wide or in goal. Both areas,
I'd say,
are pretty safe.
Well, yeah, it sounds like a lot of fun. To be honest, Joe, we hadn't heard of that before, had we?
Yeah, I was a bit confused when I saw this question, so it's been cleared up now. And
yeah, you definitely have to know what it is to do it.
Exactly, and that is referenced in the question. That Tom will know what it's about. But what would you say is your life highlight in answer to the question? The victory.
Your
professional debut.
If I got on the score sheet and a Krogfest victory for the youngies would pit my debut, I'd say definitely. It's a rare occasion. The Beards or the Oldies normally romp home, which is a shame, really.
Well, 2021, hopefully the non-Beards can get the victory. And Tom, yeah, make it onto the score sheet for us, please. And we'll take it as a win for the County Cricket Podcast.
I'll feed it back.
Good. Fantastic. Well, that is also our fan questions segment also completed. But then we move on to our third and final segment of today's podcast, which is, of course, teammates, or as I should say, Christmas teammates, seeing as we are very close to the festive season. So, Tom, have you ever watched Soccer EM before? Do you know how teammates as a concept actually works?
I've not watched Soccer AM recently, but I used to watch it as a kid, growing up on a Saturday morning.
Perfect. Well, I'll just quickly explain it for both yourself and the listeners out there. So basically, here at the County Cricket Podcast, we have, of course, got teammates. So we have an assortment of questions ranging from some cricket ones and, of course, some festive ones as well for Christmas teammates. Pretty much just surrounding Tom's teammates in the North Ants dressing room at Wantage Road. So we'll start with the first one, which is always an absolute classic here on the County Cricket Podcast. And that is, who is the teacher's pet in the North Ants dressing room?
That's a tough one, really, because it's a fresh dressing room, so I don't really know. I'd probably say Saif Zaib. He's the one that spends the longest like bowling and batting in the nets and getting coaches and stuff to throw balls at him. So I reckon, I mean, I don't really know yet, but I'd say that he's probably, but he also works really hard. So I'd say that he's probably classed as maybe the teacher's pet.
Yeah, fair enough. And he also, he's a very, very good fielder, isn't he?
Yes.
Yes, Saif, very good. Very good.
Yeah. He took, who was that catch against?
Glamorgan.
Yeah, that's right. That was.
It was at Warwickshire, wasn't it?
Yeah, Edgbaston. Yep.
Yeah, I think that's probably up there with one of the best catches in county cricket in a while, without a doubt.
Yeah,
so, yeah, very, very good fielder. And according to Tom, from what he's seen so far, teacher's pet. So the next one, the first Christmassy one, and that is the biggest Grinch.
The biggest Grinch? That's a tough one. I'd say maybe Cobby. Maybe Cobby. I'd say that he's probably the one to play it cool, probably, and you know, not act as if like he's bothered. But yeah, I reckon I'm going to go with him.
Fair enough. He could just be a secret Christmas fan, couldn't he?
Mariah Carey. Yeah, correct. If so, I'd love to see that a little bit more.
To be fair, yeah. If you're listening, Cobby, come on the podcast. We'll sing some Mariah Carey for all the listeners out there.
I don't think we will. I won't be singing.
Oh, of course you will, Joe. I've heard you sing Sweet Caroline before. Voice of an angel. But moving on to our next question. We have got another Christmas-themed one, and that is the most likely person to want a bat for Christmas.
I reckon Ben Sanderson, because it's a random one, but I know he borrows a lot of his bats from Cobby. So if he got bought one, for Christmas.
He'd be chuffed for that.
Yeah, he'd be chuffed for that, I reckon.
Fair enough. The next one is Karaoke King, Christmas Karaoke King, and what do you reckon their Christmas song would be?
Good one. Maybe, I mean, I've not seen him sing yet, but I know when I did my initiation song at North Ants, he was very up and about, was Luke Proctor. He wanted you to be, you know, like embarrassed, and he always wanted you to get like, you know, he's like on the books, like shouting, you come on, get someone sing us a song. I reckon he'd be decent on karaoke.
Yeah. What do you reckon his Christmas song would be? What do you reckon he could
belt
out? I don't know. I reckon it could range for any, you know, anything.
Yeah.
I reckon he'd sing a classic, I reckon.
Yeah. Fair enough. Has he cut your hair yet?
He has not, no.
No. Oh.
I mean, to be fair, I was only there for like 2 weeks. So giving me
yeah, but if you needed a haircut, especially considering barbers were shut at times. True. Yeah, Luke Potts' barbershop. There you go.
Brilliant. Moving on to our next one then, Tom. Who do you say has dodgy dance moves? Who isn't the greatest mover in the North Ants dressing room?
My early thinking of this is perhaps Brandon Glover. I mean, he gets called Camel, so I mean, I don't think he's not. I don't think he'd be renowned for his dance moves, unfortunately. But to be honest, I reckon I'd rival him for that as well, because I'm horrendous. So I can't really let him take the for that one.
Fair enough. You can vote for yourself. So you put your name forward for dodgy dance moves there.
Yeah, so definitely. There'd be a lot of people happy for that as well. Happy about that.
We could have a dance off. Brandon is a former guest of ours. I would be up for that.
Could we arrange that?
Would you back yourself to win?
I'd have to. I'd have to back myself, yeah.
Fair enough.
I'd give it my best shot.
The next one. Who is the biggest badger?
Oh, without a doubt, Cobby. Without a doubt. He's always glued to like the scores or anyone's stats or anything. If anything you want to know about, you know, pretty much any other cricketer. Cobby, you saw your man to go to with that.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Brandon said.
I was about to say, I'm pretty sure Brandon said Josh Cobb for that one. So Yeah, fair enough. You're both in agreement there.
Definitely.
Moving on to our next one. This is a brand new one, by the way, Tom. In how many episodes are we in? 30, 31 episodes? We haven't actually had this on before, so this is brand new. And this is the most likely to get timed out in the middle of a game.
That's a tough one again, really, because I don't really... I mean, I've only played two games. Well, from what I've seen this year, I'm going to go with Sterling, and he opens the bat. From what I've seen, like the two games that I played, he was like ready like last minute. So I reckon if there was a collapse and he was batting like five,
he'd be in trouble.
He'd be in trouble, I reckon.
The next one, now, I don't know if you've actually played football with Northants at all, but if you haven't, you may still have an opinion on this. Who's the best footballer?
Best footballer, I'd say, would be early. I mean, it's an early call, but I've only played Pig. I reckon the best footballer would be perhaps Keezy. Keezy's pretty decent. Yeah, I'd go with him.
Yeah, fair choice that, Tom. Now, this next one, this is another one which could be interesting. Do you play golf at all, Tom?
Yes, play golf.
Okay, now this is a very, very prestigious award here, I suppose, on TCCP teammates. And that is, who's the best golfer at Wantage Road?
I played, actually, a few days ago with Cobby, Sando and Bucky. And it's safe to say that none of those would be the best. Yeah, I mean, I know a few other lads play. Wakers plays, Rob Keogh plays. Rich Levy is supposed to be good. Rosso is supposed to be good. It's hard to say without playing. You know, I've only played with those three, but I know there's a few lads. So I reckon anyone between Rich Levy, yeah, Keezy is pretty good. Wakers is pretty good as well. I reckon I'd go with them.
Fair enough. And the final one then, to end things off, who has the best celebration, wicket or 50 or 100, if you've seen any of them? Who has the best celebration?
I'd probably go with either Sando or Bucky for best celebration. Both get pretty up for it. I think Sando's was good last year when we played against Warwickshire and he got Hayne out again. Sorry to bring it back with that, but that was quite a good celebration. I think he's got him out a few times where he brings the keeper up and gets him LBW. So that's a plan that keeps working. So he's pretty happy when that happens.
Yeah, fair enough. And what about, do you have a go-to celebration, or do you just kind of, whatever happens, happens?
Definitely whatever happens, happens. It's not a pre-planned thing.
Pre-planned thing, yeah. What about when you got your 50 in against Warwickshire? What about when you got your 50 there? Did you do anything specific, or did you just?
I think I just put my arms out and just turned to the dugout.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was nothing. There was no real pre-planned. Early on, the first game against Lancashire, I hit the winning runs that one, and that was a bit of a I pre-planned it. I was like, I know what I'm going to do here. I'll bowl it and then run off and like punch the air. And then it didn't really work as well because I'd only come in for like a few balls and I ran off and punched the air. And one of the lank slides were like, oh, come on, mate. You've only hit four.
Yeah.
So, I think a lot of pre-planned celebrations don't really work out. It's better just to...
Fair enough.
Yeah,
I think it's more of a football thing, that, isn't it? Pre-planned celebrations.
Yeah, get something written on your shirt or something like that.
Exactly. Yeah, pull it out. Yeah,
you can't really go running off to the cameras either. Cricket,
kiss the camera after you take a wicket.
Slightly different. Oh God. Yeah.
Yeah. Fair enough.
So, for any of the listeners out there, if you see Tom take a wicket next year and he goes off and kisses the camera or reveals a Why Always Me shirt, now you know why. But that is a fantastic way to end a brilliant podcast, I'd say, Tom. So just before we go, do you have anything to plug or promote? Any social media channels, for example, that the listeners can go and follow?
I mean, no, not really. Just my Instagram and my Twitter account. But to be honest, if you want to look at pictures of my dog and occasionally when I do well at cricket, then that's the place to go. But no, nothing really to promote.
Well, fair enough, Tom. We will leave the links to those, obviously, in the podcast description. But just from us two here at the County Cricket Podcast, we just want to say a massive, massive thank you for coming on today. Been a fantastic guest. Very interesting. Some very funny answers towards the end as well. And yeah, you provided us with a lot of entertainment today. So obviously from us, we're very grateful and thank you very much for coming on.
No problem. Thank you guys for having me on.
Well, that does bring us to an end to today's episode of the County Cricket Podcast. To all of the listeners out there, thank you as always for tuning in. And as always, guys, we'll see you on the next one.